Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. More than 2 years ago, Amtrak unveiled an expansion plan that would link dozens of cities across the U.S. The proposed new and expanded routes included several in Ohio. Expanding passenger rail is proving to be popular, as evidenced by Amtrak's Borealis route between Chicago and St. Paul, which has been exceeding ridership expectations. We're getting the latest updates on passenger rail this hour, and we'll begin our discussion looking at the U.S. with Jim Matthews, President and CEO of National Rail Passengers Association. Welcome to All Sides, Jim.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So most listeners know, they know Amtrak, but they may be less familiar with the National Passenger Rail Association. A part of your mission says, "Together we will create a connected America." So for a car-focused country like ours, how do you convince people to pay more attention to passenger rail?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, a lot of the energy is already behind that. Mm-hmm. Every single year until COVID happened, more people were riding trains every single year than the year before. So in some ways, we don't have to convince people to take the train. What we have to do is to convince those that need to invest in it, to invest in the right capacity so that people who want to take the train can take the train. Everywhere we put the trains in, we see that the ridership exceeds all expectations, just as you mentioned with the Borealis. So we have 127,000 members, donors, and supporters around the country. We are the oldest and the largest organization that does this kind of work. We were founded in 1967 to fight for the continuation of passenger trains in the U.S. because we were going to lose passenger service at that time. And so we're in a much different place now. We are seeing some investment that's long overdue, half a century's worth overdue. But people want to take the train. The issue is not so much convincing people to take the train. It's getting the right kind of investment in place so that when people want to take the train, they can. Hmm.
The last time we spoke about passenger rail in the show, we learned about the success of Amtrak's Borealis route, which is between Chicago and St. Paul. It's been exceeding ridership expectations. Do you know if this is going to continue? I mean, these ridership expectations, have they been in the months since the last time that we talked? Has it been exceeding expectations?
Oh, for sure. The Borealis has just done very, very well. Launched in the summer of 2024, thereabouts. I was on the first train. Mm-hmm. Huge success. The early ridership projection said that it was going to get 124,000 riders a year, roughly. So 1 year after launch, there are 212,000. Mm-hmm. And it's continuing to grow. The limit on the growth is the capacity of the train. Mm-hmm. You don't have a bunch of empty seats. I guess looking at the rest of the country, one of the problems we have, one of the things we're working so hard on as the association, is the development lead times for train service in the U.S. take too long, so long that it's hard to know whether other states have been inspired by the Borealis. Look at the Borealis just as an example. It took a decade of work to get that train launched, 10 years. And this year, the new Mardi Gras that launched between New Orleans and Mobile, that was 19 years and 11 months.
Wow.
So that's one of the things we're working to change. So there's certainly a lot of excitement about how the Borealis has done. And people kind of look across the border at Michigan. They look at the Wolverine doing really well. Everywhere the trains go in, they are popular. The trick is getting the investment and getting all of the bureaucratic pieces lined up.
So it taking 10 years or 19 years to get a train up and running from the idea to actually a train on the tracks, is it a money problem or is it a bureaucracy problem?
It's an all of the above problem. Mm-hmm. We have spent really, our association was born in 1967 and we have spent a lot of time since then trying to rebuild the capacity to launch trains and to have trains. So some of it is about governments not having the ability to invest. Some of it is about the unique way that rail operates in the United States, where we have trains that run on what are called host railroads, which are the private railroads, the freight railroads. And so you have issues with access to that. The Borealis is what's called a state-supported train. And so that means that you have the governments of Minnesota and Wisconsin and Illinois, which all have to be on board and in alignment to get that going. That takes a lot of time. So there are a lot of bureaucratic issues, but there's also a lot of investment trouble as well, because it is expensive to get started. And one of the great things that happened in 2021 was the passage of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the IIJA, which included $66 billion for passenger rail. And we had never as a country spent that much at one time on passenger rail. And so, you know, this was terrific. But like we've seen going back to 1967, it's a kind of a one-time shot, right? And so you just have this sort of boom-bust investment cycle. So you can't have a kind of predictable stream that says, yes, this is how we're going to do trains in this country. There are 69 routes like the Borealis that were identified as part of that bipartisan infrastructure law through a program called the Corridor Identification Program. Cleveland, Toledo, Detroit corridor, that's in the mix. The three C's and D, the Cleveland, Columbus, Dayton, Cincinnati, that's in the mix. Fort Wayne, Lima, Columbus, Pittsburgh. Then, and of course, there's the long distance Cardinal, which runs three times a week. One of the corridor projects is to make that a daily train that serves Cincinnati. That could be up and running pretty quickly. All of these are part of that infrastructure package that passed in 2021. And just as we talk about the timeline, here we are. It's 2025 and we're getting close to the end of 2025. And these corridors are still under study.
Oh.
So this is there's a lot of excitement and a lot of energy, but it takes too long. And that's kind of one of the big issues that we have.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about also the change in hands of administration. So, you know, President Biden was sometimes one of his nicknames was Amtrak Joe because he was a big advocate for passenger rail. But have things changed under the current administration? Is that slowing it down, too?
They've changed a little. I mean, so far, we are cautiously optimistic when it comes to passenger rail. You know, during the first Trump administration, the White House called for just eliminating all federal funding for Amtrak's long distance routes, just wipe it out, and then just preserving the service for the Northeast Corridor and the state supported routes like the Borealis, if it had existed at that time. But because of the way that the network works, that would have destabilized the entire country, but especially in the Midwest. You wouldn't have those connections that you need to make it actually function. So that would have been a disaster. So far, the second Trump administration has taken a kind of moderate approach to Amtrak and passenger rail. They're calling for flat funding. We would like to see increased funding because the bipartisan infrastructure law, that $66 billion, that was a down payment on growth, and a flat budget doesn't do that.
A flat budget's better than no budget.
But a flat budget is better than no budget. Yeah. That's exactly right. So this is why we say we're sort of cautiously optimistic. There's an interesting thing, too, that they seem this time around to be really interested in getting in the real estate side of Amtrak's network. They've made a lot of high profile decisions around the management of the train stations in New York City and in Washington, D.C. And we have seen a slowdown of some of the money coming out of DOT for passenger rail because of the White House's decision to do a general review of all the grants that the Biden administration selected, because they're trying to root out, you know, what they're saying is DEI, whatever that means in the passenger rail world. So we are seeing some of that kind of slowdown, and we do have to have different kinds of conversations than we did, you know, 2-3 years ago. But so far, it has been a little less disastrous than we thought it would be.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about whether passenger rail is having a moment right now with Jim Matthews, president and CEO of the National Passenger Rail Association. You released on your website recently that you picked Toledo for your next conference. So does that mean that you have high hopes for passenger rail service in Ohio in the future if you pick Toledo?
You know what? First of all, yes, I do. I have always had high hopes for Ohio in passenger rail, and because it's so obvious, right? When you look at the map, you look at the way, you look at the geography, you look at where the stations would be. It's a head scratcher why it doesn't already exist.
It's the heart of it all.
As the saying goes, right? Yeah. As the bumper sticker goes. But no, I'm super familiar with Ohio. Spent a lot of time actually in Toledo. So I'm really excited to see that happen. The way that our process works is we have a council of representatives internally to the organization from all over the country. These are rank and file members, and they were given a choice of four cities, and they selected from that list of four cities, they selected Toledo. And I was really excited to see that. Toledo is such an obvious place to really kick off this campaign to really bring Ohio back into the fold into passenger rail. It just makes perfect sense.
Does this give you higher hopes for bringing people together to talk in reality about that Cleveland to Detroit train that goes through Toledo?
It does. It does, because one of the things we're selfishly hoping will happen is that by bringing folks from all over the country who have had success developing passenger rail in their communities, you know, you look at a place like Virginia or North Carolina, just as an example, they're models for how passenger rail can succeed in the United States. We bring these people into Ohio, and we can connect them with some of the folks in Ohio who have been behind some of these, honestly, kind of surprising decisions to me. For instance, pulling the funding from the Midwest Interstate Passenger Rail Compact. That makes no sense to me. I don't know why you would pull out from that.
Yeah, our most recent budget eliminated the funding for Ohio to rejoin that compact to have a voice.
Right.
It's basically to have a voice in the Midwest rail conversation.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And when you look at around the country, the way that rail is growing, interest in passenger rail is growing, and it's growing on the right as well as on the left, why you would silence your voice in that conversation is a little baffling to me. And so, again, our hope is that by convening in Toledo, we can really start to create that conversation between those in Ohio who are in the policymaking roles and those from outside Ohio who can share their expertise and say, look, this has worked. This has been an economic development engine in our state, and it can be one for you if you just do these things. Because the success stories are all over the country. You know, the Borealis is the one you mentioned, but they're all over. They're the Mardi Gras in between New Orleans and Mobile, same thing. Everywhere we do this, you see economic growth. And it's a boon to all of these economies, particularly smaller economies and rural economies. It makes sense. And to the extent that we can have people tell that story in Ohio to people who need to hear it, that might be the tipping point. We're certainly hoping that's the case.
The government shutdown has caused confusion at airports and frustrated travelers. Has the shutdown caused any discontent among passenger rail?
Not so much discontent. It's interesting, right? The one of the biggest problems with Amtrak right now is capacity. They just don't have the rolling stock. They don't have the seats. They don't have the trains. They just don't have enough yet to satisfy the demand. And you see this around the holiday periods generally, but of course it's even worse now with airlines canceling flights. People are turning to Amtrak, which is great, but they don't have enough trains to just, you know, add another 400 person train on any given route. So you're starting to see people trying to get on the train who can't. So there's a little bit of discontent in that sense. But a lot of what I've seen, certainly anecdotally, is people getting on the train, sometimes for the first time, they've never experienced it, and kind of posting on their social media accounts, wow, I had no idea it was like this. This is wonderful. The people are great. I'm enjoying my ride. And all of the kinds of things that we already know. And we think maybe that is going to help us in the long term.
What would you say to people in Ohio who have heard so many proposals and so many plans for so many years about passenger rail and they're still waiting for it to become a reality? What would you say they need to do to move something faster?
Well, there's a few things. The number one thing is get involved locally. You have, as it turns out, one of the best local organizations in passenger rail ever in the form of All Aboard Ohio.
We're talking to them next. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, good. They do terrific work. We're good partners with them. And they would really be helpful to Ohio, folks in Ohio trying to get this done. The next thing is, as I said at the beginning of our conversation, it's not about getting people to ride the train. It's about getting the right investment from the policymakers. And that's where the voice of people, voters, ordinary folks really comes into play. You have some supportive members of Congress in the Ohio delegation, and you need to push on that. You need to get people to see that pulling out of the Midwest Interstate Passenger Rail Commission was a bad idea. You need to get people to see that swapping out the passenger rail representative on the rail commission for a freight representative is a bad idea. You need those folks to come to that from the policymakers that you basically hire through your vote to make those things happen. They work for you. And you need to be able to say to them, look, this is something that's important to us. 75% of people in Ohio want passenger rail. So why would you not push on that, right? That is something they really need to do is get active locally. The next thing I would suggest, though, too, is pay attention to the federal planning that is taking place. One of the things that the infrastructure law did was it created a process where we can have this corridor ID program, where we can advance these projects and we can get some things moving. And a lot of what gets done in these kinds of corridor ID projects comes from local people waving the flag for their project. And so Ohio can help with that. If you care about passenger rail in Ohio and you care about, say, 3Cs and Ds, you need to be part of that process. You can join with us. You can join with All Aboard Ohio. You can become politically vocal and active. And it's not a Republican or Democrat thing. It is one of the truly nonpartisan issues out there. And so if you raise your voice and you get your policymakers to hold themselves accountable for carrying out what they were voted in to do, that will really help.
We've been speaking with Jim Matthews, President and CEO of the National Passenger Rail Association. Thank you for your time today, Jim.
Thanks, Amy. Take care.
And coming up, we're going to talk with the advocacy group All Aboard Ohio. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Conversations about connecting Ohio's major metropolitan areas have been taking place for years. Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton, and other smaller cities could experience an economic boom from passenger rail service. A recent Axios headline proclaimed a pair of Ohio passenger rail plans are picking up steam. We're talking about the latest updates on passenger rail in Ohio. One of the leading advocates for passenger rail in Ohio is Executive Director of All Aboard Ohio, John Esterly. And he joins us now. Welcome back to All Sides, John.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
So the last time we had you on the show, we talked about some setbacks for rail when it came to the budget. But what are things looking like now? Why did the Axios article say things are picking up steam?
Well, you know, as you'd mentioned, we kind of came out of the budget cycle a little downtrodden, didn't see some of the things we would have liked to have seen in there. But since the budget got codified, we've gotten some good news in the corridor ID process. All three of the routes in Ohio, the two sponsored by the state of Ohio, and then the third, which is sponsored by the city of Fort Wayne with substantial support from MORPC, have moved on beyond step one in the corridor ID process. So we are now just waiting on our friends at the our federal partners to kind of release us from rail purgatory and move into step two, which is an incredible move forward in the development process.
Now, previously, when we were talking with Jim from the national organization, he was saying that to get the Borealis line, for example, to be to happen, it took 10 years. He mentioned a line called the Mardi Gras line. It took 19 years. What year are we in for some of these here in Ohio?
So great question. And I still like to say we're along that most optimistic timeline where we could have passenger service very early in the 2030s, 2030, 2031, along some of these lines, either 3CD as it passes through Columbus or even that Midwest Connect, which is Pittsburgh to Chicago passing through Columbus.
Okay. So you're saying maybe 5 or 6 years, right? But we've been talking about it for, so if you looked at the big picture, is this like 15, 20 years? I don't know.
I think in reality, we've been talking about passenger service in Columbus since we had passenger service in the
70s. Since it went away.
So it's been quite some time.
I guess it depends on how you measure it, right?
Exactly.
So State Representative Brian Stewart has been a bit of a roadblock when it comes to rail. He's a powerful lawmaker when it comes to budgeting. Do you think you can win him over or someone like him over in the next budget cycle where you can get some more support from the state?
So I give Rep. Stewart a lot of credit. I think he was initially kind of dismissive of the passenger rail expansion. And since then, he's really taken a position of neutrality. When you look at the kind of the wins that we were able to get in the budget cycle, they were all in the state house. So I think that speaks volumes to kind of the temperature in the room, particularly in the House of Representatives, where Rep. Stewart is the chair of finance. So I think really our struggle now is in the upper chamber, speaking with our senators.
Oh, so you're saying that the budget changes came from the Senate?
That's right.
Okay. Okay. So what would you be looking for? You want them to refund this, I forgot the name of the commission, the Midwest...
Interstate Passenger Rail Commission.
Yes, I was like, it has too many words. Okay. So they withdrew the funding from that, so Ohio doesn't really have a voice on that commission right now. Can we get back in?
Absolutely. And that's one of the big priorities that All Aboard Ohio has moving through the rest of this General Assembly is to see some standalone legislation introduced to rejoin that MIPRC or MIPRIC and really get an opportunity to vet that out on the Senate side where they had expressed some concerns, have some hearings so that, you know, we can have people come in and speak to the benefit of being a member. And then hopefully in the next budget cycle in 2027, that can be just included in the transportation budget.
And Jim, who we spoke to earlier, he mentioned that he was disappointed to see that a member of another commission who used to be a passenger rail representative is now a freight representative. Tell me about that.
That's right. So our Ohio Rail Development Commission, or ORDC, is made up a number of appointed commissioners that each represent different aspects of the rail industry. And in the state budget cycle this last year, the commissioner that represents the interests of passenger rail was eliminated and replaced with a second freight rail representative. So, again, for folks in the passenger rail advocacy space, we saw that as kind of a low blow, to be perfectly candid. That you know, we've really taken all priority whatsoever about passenger rail away.
Did they say why they did it? Was it just because there is so much freight here in Ohio?
I think, you know, from 10,000 feet up, their explanation was to allow both the larger railroads, the class ones, and then the smaller railroads, the class twos and threes, to each have a representative on the board. We had tried to make the argument that that could be done at the expense of one of the three representatives of the general public and not specifically the representative passenger rail. But unfortunately, I think the train had kind of left the station on
There's
that,
so many train puns. Right? I know. They're so great. So has All Aboard Ohio worked in recent months to enlist support from consumers, the businesses, the general public? Since these things happen with the budget, you got to kind of look elsewhere, right?
Absolutely. So we've had a coalition of municipal, county, and local elected officials since late 2023, kind of in conjunction with the announcement of these corridor ID routes. We've since expanded that to include members of the business community and other stakeholders that we think would be good voices, particularly to our state legislators. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the benefit across kind of all different sectors of passenger rail expansion.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the latest updates on passenger rail in Ohio with All Aboard Ohio Executive Director John Esterly. We talked earlier in the show about the biggest passenger rail conference in the country being held in Toledo next year. So I'm guessing you had a hand in making that happen.
Yeah. And as you know, full disclosure, as a native son of the Glass City, I'm very excited to have the Passenger Rail Association join us in Ohio and in my hometown.
Why Toledo?
So Toledo is one of the three major cities in Ohio that has existing Amtrak service. Objectively, it has the best service times. Mm. So
they're not in the middle of the night like Cleveland and Cincinnati.
Exactly. they're not a ton better, but it's very early morning and very late evening when the service time's coming through. They've also got a incredible station there that I think RPA and All Aboard Ohio are going to advocate for the use of for this conference.
Mm. So by having this conference there, you're bringing everyone who is everyone in passenger rail from around the country into one place. Are you hoping to get a few lawmakers to drive, you know, from wherever it is in the state they are to come to the conference? Or are you going to bring passenger rail national people to them?
Absolutely. So it's certainly a hope of ours to get some of the decision makers statewide into that room, not only from Ohio, but with it being right along that proposed Cleveland-Toledo-Detroit route, to get lawmakers from Southeast Michigan and even the greater Michigan area to come down and join as well.
This Cleveland to Detroit route via Toledo, where is it in the planning process? Is it one of those stage one looking at stage two as well?
It is. So the Cleveland-Toledo-Detroit is one of the two routes that's being sponsored by the state of Ohio through ORDC. So both of those routes, Cleveland-Toledo-Detroit and then the 3CD, are, again, at the end of stage one, waiting on the blessing mm-hmm. to enter stage two.
We always talk about the 3Cs and D line, Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Dayton. Who's the biggest player that needs to happen to make this happen? So, because it's all here in Ohio. So I'm sure getting federal support would help, but you need Ohio basically to be the biggest advocate, right?
Absolutely. And again, all signs kind of point to the state legislature. So as Ohio is the local partner for the 3CD, mm-hmm. They're the ones that bear the responsibility of any local match dollars. So throughout the course of the study process through Corridor ID, they're responsible for the local match component. And then in an optimistic world, when we're looking mm-hmm. at capital improvements, they'd be responsible for the local match component of that as well.
Mm. But then we were mentioning the Borealis route, which Jim in the previous segment said had three states working together. So three states were all invested in that. So is it going to be easier to get something like Cleveland to Detroit to happen because there's two states involved, or does that make it harder, in your opinion?
It really depends on the cooperation between the two states. So that Cleveland Toledo Detroit route, obviously, mm-hmm. we're going to have to do a lot of work with Michigan and MDOT to get that accomplished. I would also flag that the Midwest Connect route, which is the one that MORPC has a big hand in, mm-hmm. That includes portions of five states. So when you talk about the planning and the organization there, it does become more complicated. But again, if the political will is there, I think that can actually help kind of spread the burden of the economic cost across multiple jurisdictions.
So what you're talking about, the MORPC money, that is the Midwest Connect line. And we're going to talk more about that after the break. But it's Chicago to through Columbus and Pittsburgh. That's what it connects. Do I have that right?
Correct.
Okay. So why did Morpsey pick that one to put so much money into instead of this Toledo one or 3CD? Or are they involved in all? I don't know.
So they do have, to some extent, a small hand in 3CD as well, mm-hmm. Just because it falls within the jurisdiction of the kind of the Morpsey zone, their 15 counties. The Midwest Connect, again, it's actually sponsored by the city of Fort Wayne, but Morpsey's doing a lot of their administrative planning. It really does, when you look at the broader region, connect so many of the cities in the Midwest, you know, large population centers like Chicago and Pittsburgh, where we've got a lot of folks in the Columbus and greater central Ohio area traveling to anyway. So it really offers an incredible opportunity to connect the greater Midwest. But again, Morpsey is involved in the 3CD as well, which is kind of a smaller snapshot of the larger cities in Ohio.
This Chicago to Pittsburgh one, is this the one, this is what you're talking about when you talk about Fort Wayne? It's going to go through
Correct.
There? Okay, so are you saying Fort Wayne is the most, like, involved or, like, has the most oomph?
Well, so they actually threw their hand up as the local partner. So mm-hmm. on all of the paperwork at the federal level, it's actually the city of Fort Wayne that's got the financial responsibility for all of the steps.
So it's the Fort Wayne line?
It is.
All right. Is that the name of it? Or no, the mid, or it's, well, it's the Midwest Connect
Midwest
line.
Midwest Connect, yeah.
Okay. So what does that mean at the federal level? Like, what do all of these cities need to do to get the federal government to help, I guess?
So that's a great question. And I think as we move through step two of the corridor ID process, and I think things become a little bit more competitive, I think that's where it's going to be most important for cities along these routes to really advocate not only for themselves within kind of the scope of the route, but also at the federal level as well. I know the Morpsey route, which I'm sure you'll talk a little bit more about in the next segment, they've been fairly aggressive with the federal government in terms of letting them know that they've already collected all the money that they'll need for step two. They're mm-hmm. ready, willing, and able to move on. And really, the ball is in the federal government's court to kind of release them and allow them into that next stage of the process.
What do you hear from smaller cities who want to get involved? Because we talk about when we name 3CD, we talk about the bigger cities, but there are some smaller cities who want a station along these different train routes. Does that help it to get more cities involved, or just is it too many cooks in the kitchen, I guess?
I think, you know, the more the merrier when it comes to advocacy. And I'll call out kind of two of our best partners along the 3CD route. First mm-hmm. is Crestline, which is a small city kind of between Columbus and Cleveland as you would head north.
Okay.
Mayor Linda Pitt has been an incredibly vocal advocate for passenger rail in terms of a stop there in Crestline. When we did our whistle stop tour early last year, we had stops across the state in a number of larger cities, and we would average between 30 and 50 people in the room. The stop that we did in Crestline had over 400 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she really, put together a large group of advocates there, and I think is going to continue to advocate for a stop there. The other one that I'd call out is the city of Hamilton, just outside Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. They have been, again, incredible partners, and I think they've got kind of a unique opportunity in their area. They've got a fairly large sports complex down there, Spooky Nook, and they really look to be not just an opportunity for their residents to get out of the city, but also really to become a tourist destination, leverage that sports facility, and bring a lot of people down to their community.
Which of these plans that we're talking about that are gaining steam, as we like to say, you would need new track, and which ones would partner with freight track that's already there?
So that's, I guess, the good news and the bad news is mm-hmm. none of these that have been proposed would require new track. It would require, in some cases, extensive rehabilitation of what's there. In some cases, no rehabilitation whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But we're going to use existing freight right-of-way and do that in conjunction with the freight railroads. So we're really hoping to find good partners, not only with CSX and Norfolk Southern, the two largest railroads in Ohio, but also some of the smaller ones whose trackage that we would use for some of these routes.
But what is missing in certain places would be a train station, right?
Exactly. That's okay. When it comes to capital improvement, that's really going to be the big pieces is mm-hmm. Cities that don't have existing passenger rail service are going to need some kind of station to get people on and off the train.
Okay. And can a station be just as simple as a platform and like a ticket window? Like, you don't even need a ticket window. Everything's online. What can it be simple? Or, I mean, are we, or is everyone always envisioning a train station of the past?
I think, you know, everybody does envision that, you know, incredible train station. We've got some great examples.
I'm thinking Hogwarts, like, you know, Harry Potter train station. Yeah.
You know, we've got, as I mentioned, the station in Toledo, which is beautiful, but also the Union Terminal in Cincinnati is an Art Deco masterpiece. But I think when we look at practical application and practical investment, you know, really, to your point, it really can be as simple as just a platform and a ticket window, which we see in some of our smaller station stops in Ohio already.
Yeah. If you could fast forward time, what would the train station here in Columbus look like?
Well, so again, worst kept secret in Columbus is most of it's already there under the existing convention center. So where you currently go to get your Starbucks in the basement of the Hyatt is going to be our ticket window. And then at ground level will be the platform. And the Convention Center Authority actually has some incredible renderings. So you can have a pretty good idea of what that station's going to look like already.
All right. So when we make it from stage one to stage two, you're going to come back and tell me about it?
I'd love to.
Is that going to be, when will that be?
Hopefully in the next few months is what we're hoping. We had, you know, obviously some delays with government shutdown and also with waiting on appointments of certain key administrators at the federal level. But we really hope for the kind of the floodgates to open up.
All right. Executive Director of All Aboard Ohio, John Esterly, has been our guest. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right. And coming up from Rails to Trails, we'll get the latest updates on trains and then bus service and bus transit here and throughout the state. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're getting the latest updates on passenger rail in Ohio this hour, and we're going to transition from passenger rail to bus trails in Ohio as well. Joining us to discuss is Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren. Welcome back to All Sides, Brent.
Thanks for having me.
So the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, also known as MORPC, announced last month $650,000 in local funds have been committed toward this passenger corridor that we're calling the Midwest Connect. Are they the only ones putting money in?
No, there's a number of Ohio cities that have contributed to that. There's Columbus, Hilliard, Dublin, Lima, and Marysville. I think that's the list.
And do all of those cities want a piece of this? They want a train station?
They definitely do. And that's part of why they're putting money in, I think. But yes.
So this train, they want to have it stop in Marysville and Hilliard.
And and that's a decision that has not been made yet. I mean, as John was talking about, there's a step two to this process that we haven't gotten to. And it's the FRA, I believe, that'll decide exactly where all the stations will go. But they all want to throw their hat in the ring. And like some of these cities like Hilliard and Dublin have actually, they have purchased land next to the railroad tracks. And they have gone through these pretty extensive planning processes to talk about, oh, maybe we could build some stuff next to the train stop and make this into more of like a mixed use development. So they've both gone down that road pretty far.
Okay, so they're just going on faith, though, that maybe they'll get, right? So so they have no commitment that they'll actually be a train station
in
Hilliard, but
this is
just high hopes?
Yes.
Okay, so this Midwest Connect connects Chicago to Pittsburgh through Columbus. So all of these smaller cities are buying in with the hopes that it will stop there. But I find that both Dublin and Hilliard are interesting in getting train stops because they seem close together for me.
Yeah, they're about, I think their stops are maybe about 8 miles apart. So
I don't know much about trains. Do trains like to stop every 8 miles?
Yeah, right. But, you know, the other thing is I think part of it, I think a lot of people hear that and say, oh, that's going to be slow me down if I go from downtown to Chicago. I don't want to stop a million times. But, you know, on the other hand, maybe in Columbus, we've forgotten how trains work. You know, like there's express lines and there's local lines.
So some won't stop and some trains would stop.
Right.
Okay.
So there's lots of options. I mean, I think when I talked to advocates about this, like several years ago, as you mentioned, this has been a topic of discussion for a long time. I know they said, like, oh, it's not inconceivable that both Dublin and Hilliard would get a stop. They may or may not. There's other places where you have sort of a mix of local service and more express service on the same line.
And then what other cities did you mention? Marysville and there was one other.
Lima.
And Lima. Yeah. Okay. Would that be an economic boom for them to have a train station? Do you think it would help with development there?
Yeah, no, I think so. And, you know, John mentioned, I think Crestline is really going hard for, for their stop. But I think there's been a lot of interest in Marysville and Lima. And, you know, that's part of why they're putting in money into the process now, because they hope they would hope to see a stop. And they see that, because, you know, one of the things about train travel is that it takes you directly into the middle of a town or a city. And the, some of these smaller towns are trying to revitalize their downtowns, and they see, oh, a train station would really help in those efforts.
Now, this is not a quick process, and John in our last segment was trying to be very optimistic, and I was talking about how many years it was taking. So four rail lines going through Ohio were announced several years ago, and we're still in the studying phase, right? And there's just, there's no telling how long the study phase will be.
No, and, you know, you've been covering this for a long time. I've been covering this for a long time. I've written about so many studies about all of these corridors. And, I mean, even going back to the Hyperloop, remember that?
Like, I do remember the Hyperloop. I was supposed to be getting to Pittsburgh so much faster than I do now.
I know, there's a lot of excitement about that. That went away. But even at the time, MORPC was involved, and they said, oh, we're going to study this corridor and also keep open the possibility that we can have passenger rail, not just the Hyperloop, which never happened. So yeah, it's a very long process. And I think even the studies they did back then, they're having to redo those studies now because it's been so long. So who knows? I mean, if the question is it really going to happen this time? I don't know the answer to that. On the local side of things, there's going to be a lot of changes to the transportation network in Columbus that are scheduled to happen between now and 2030 or 2032. The next 5 or 7 years are going to be really big for downtown Columbus and Columbus in general, just in terms of other transportation options.
Yeah, we can talk about that in a minute. But one more thing about the trains. Is MORPC putting in the $650,000? Does that help speed anything up? I mean, it's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. Yeah, I think it helps keep things moving along. And for this line, as John mentioned, it's not as dependent on the Ohio government because it's the sponsor is Fort Wayne and MORPC, and they're sort of leading the way on it. And they're
so it leaves the state out of it
a little bit, yes,
okay.
Which is probably a positive.
And it involves, so we need Pennsylvania to get on board, someone from Ohio, so I guess it can be MORPC instead of the state. And then the city of Fort Wayne and maybe the state of Indiana and then Illinois will be involved too, right?
Yeah.
So it seems like a heavy lift to get all of those places to agree.
Yeah, but in some ways, like you see these, the incentives for the local, the cities and towns, it's already there. They've been wanting this for years. It's not as hard to get them on board as some of these other, like at the national and the state level, there's some opposition to it that is more ideological, but like these local entities, they just want to have more options for their residents, you know. It's pretty straightforward for them.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the latest transportation updates with Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren. So let's go from rails to some trails, specifically bus routes. The intercity bus service called GoBus recently announced plans to add new routes, and it will double its footprint in Ohio. Where is this going to have the most impact? Well, I guess tell us about GoBus for someone who doesn't even know what it is. What's a GoBus?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know about GoBus. It's actually really interesting. It's a kind of a public-private partnership. It's funded in part by a federal program, And the Ohio Department of Transportation administers it along with Athens, Ohio-based nonprofit organization. So
interesting.
It's
okay.
A little bit subsidized. You can see, I mean, if you know any OU students, they may have used it to get from Columbus to Athens. Tickets start, I think, at like $10 or something. It's really inexpensive. And it, I think the idea behind the federal program is to connect some smaller rural towns and areas that don't have any bus service at all. So, and the expansion that you mentioned is going to expand the routes, one going east toward Pittsburgh and another going north toward Toledo, and sort of like the smaller towns in between as well.
Yeah, the expansion adds in Bowling Green, Dayton, Marion. There's a whole list here. Mm-hmm. Upper Sandusky, Toledo, Yellow Springs. So right now, what is GoBus mainly used for? Is it Athens, people from Athens trying to get to Columbus?
Well, they have seen a lot of growth in the ridership. It's mm-hmm. been around for about 15 years. And
15 years?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it started pretty small. I think they said they had about, like, you know, 10,000 riders that mm-hmm. first year, and now they're up to over 100,000. So
okay.
it has grown in that time. And I don't think it's just OU students. I think there's a lot of people who don't have access to a car, who live in smaller places, or who live in parts of Ohio that are not well serviced by the bus, that have been utilizing it.
Now, I had heard of GoBus, but it made me feel like I was like, I haven't seen one in a while. And that's because they had a stop at Ohio State University. So maybe I used to see them occasionally in campus. But
yeah,
now,
yeah, it was very close to where we are right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happened there? Were they just not, I guess they weren't seeing the ridership from Ohio State?
Well, I don't know if it was a matter of ridership. Actually, I don't know if that was OSU that didn't want them to have that stop there anymore. Mm. I haven't looked into that. But
okay.
yeah, last
something
I think,
happened. So
last
spring, I haven't seen a GoBus in a while.
They
yeah.
stopped stopping on campus,
yeah.
and now it's just downtown, like on Mound Street, I think. Is
okay. So if an Ohio State student wants to take a GoBus, they just have to get downtown.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, is GoBus a competitor to Greyhound?
Well, yeah, they're doing some of the same things. I think they go some places that Greyhound doesn't, so they add service in.
Okay. How is Greyhound doing? do you know?
Well, the bigger story with Greyhound is that they were bought by a German company called Flixbus in, I think, 2021. And the context there is that company came in, and one of the first things they did was start to sell off the downtown bus stations mm-hmm. in cities across the country.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of those were picked up by like a hedge fund, and they're kind of being held now. In Columbus, maybe we'll talk about this, but the Greyhound station was actually bought by COTA.
Right.
So that's a little different than what's happened in other places. But yeah, Greyhound has gone through these transitions. I've heard that maybe the service is not quite what it used to be. If you're a Greyhound rider in Columbus, you used to have an indoor station that you could go mm-hmm. to and wait for a bus, and now that doesn't exist. You have to go and wait outside on the street on Mound Street to catch a bus.
Well, and I guess, but GoBus is kind of proving that you don't need a full station
mm-hmm.
to succeed, right? Because
yeah.
GoBus just has bus stops, right?
Yeah, but I'm sure, I mean, I know the city has said that they would like to see like a permanent indoor station for inner city bus travel in the city, but we haven't seen any firm plans about that. I haven't heard about anything actually kind of on the drawing board to mm-hmm. make that happen. Yeah, and we'll kind of see how that works. I know from a passenger perspective, with the weather we have in Central Ohio, it's not ideal just to have like outdoor stations for
to stand
for
there with your luggage and
yeah.
everything. But the GoBus people do it, right?
They do it, yes.
All right. we're running out of time, but I wanted to get an update. Officials with Downtown Columbus, Inc. recently hosted a community meeting providing updates on the Capital Line project, which is connecting downtown destinations, also with pedestrian and bike path loops. What updates do you have there?
Yeah, that's moving forward. This is one of those projects that is just going to really transform the streets of downtown. That's mm-hmm. going to happen in the next few years. Underground work on Gay Street is scheduled to start like next month mm-hmm. on that. It'll start. There's these like underground vaults in Gay Street that they have to fill in. So the Gay Street portion of it is a little more complicated than some of the other ones. But I think their timeline for that, for actual street work, to begin in June 2026 and be fully wrapped up by October 2027. That's for that first segment.
Okay. And you also recently wrote about new bike lanes on East Broad Street and how they're a success story. Can you tell, we have about 2 minutes left. Can you tell me why those bike lanes are a success story?
Well, that's a pilot program, and the idea was to kind of get them up and established without this long process that we often see. So the city did it. These protected bike lanes, one on each side of East Broad Street on the Near East Side, have been up and running for about a year. And they've studied it, and they've shown that, one, quite a few people are using them, and two, a lot of the like excessive speeding that they used to see on that section of Broad Street has been curtailed because of the sort of narrowing of the street. I mean, it looks... When you have a street that looks like a highway and is almost as wide as a highway, mm-hmm. drivers will treat it like that way, you know, and they found when you narrow it and you give some of that space to other uses, it really has an impact and makes it safer overall.
Do you feel like this is a pilot project then? The city's going to do this other places?
I think so. They've said that they are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We don't know where, though.
Well, one of the ones they're going to do next is North 4th Street, running north from downtown to like through the University District. They're going to take what's an unprotected bike lane and make it protected.
All right. So. Well, our guest has been Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Yes. You've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurevich. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can listen at our website, wosu.org/allsides. Subscribe to the podcast, and every episode is available in our mobile app. You can also follow All Sides on Instagram at All Sides WOSU, and you can like the show on Facebook. This is 89.7 NPR News.